where are the jobs we need going to come from? Corporate profits have been running strong, but many big companies are not using money to do much hiring. Call it a jobless recovery.
That's David Brancaccio of Up Public Radio's Marketplace and also now on PBS. So where have the jobs gone? Not in the last few years, but over the course of the last few decades. More importantly, where will the new jobs come from? Frustrated by the lack of answers from Wall Street and Washington, Brancaccio set off on a road trip to find out. The result is a new documentary on the topic hosted by Brancaccio, Fixing the Future, which is premiering this week in Columbus and 49 other cities in the United States. To learn more about the film, we have a link posted on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Joining us now is John Sisaloff. He's the executive producer of the documentary, Fixing the Future, and CEO of Jumpstart Productions, the New York-based media company that produced the film. His book about grassroots activism, Your America, Democracy's Local Heroes, is now in paperback. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks. Great to be here, Ann.
You started working on Fixing the Future more than 2 years ago now. What first inspired the work?
Well, all of us looked at the economy meltdown a few years ago and how faltering the recovery was. All of us heard that Washington was going to come to the rescue and that Wall Street was going to fix its problems. And a lot of us who were looking closely saw that neither of those things were going to happen. So we started to look in a different direction. What could happen starting from Main Street? What are the kind of sources of employment and sustainable job creation, community economic revitalization can we find that are actually going on right now in American communities? And to our surprise, we actually found quite a lot going on.
Did you already know about this movement, or was it something you discovered along the way?
We knew some of the examples that ended up being in the film, but we had no idea about how widespread and how innovative people in Main Street have become. There's something that's kind of near and dear to my heart, which is you might call it trading favors. It's called an hour exchange or time bank, where people help each other out in communities in a network. Thousands of people, some of them in the example of Portland, Maine, and you do something to help a neighbor or someone else in the network. You get an hour credit, and then from someone else, you might withdraw health care, or you might withdraw somebody helping you weatherize your basement. It's a way of stretching dollars and stretching resource skills, an example of the kind of innovation that's going on Main Street.
And David Brancaccio, he participated in that. He helped weatherize a house with somebody. He received an hour of time, and he ended up getting a sailing lesson, right?
Yeah, how cool is that? You sort of think that it's got to be hard. It's that everything that is about community solutions is going to end up making us all sweat and be unpleasant, and it won't be fun. And as one of the participants tells David, actually the woman whose house got weatherized, mm-hmm. She said, this is like finding a new kind of community. She has 1,000 friends out there who she can rely on for help and that she can actually get help from and supply help to.
If you're just joining us, my guest is John Sisaloff. He's executive producer of Fixing the Future. It's a new documentary. It premieres tonight in Columbus, among many other places in the United States. If you want to learn more about that, you can go to our website. We have a link there for you at WOSU.org/allsides. So it's more than just a documentary, though. When I went to your website, there's lots of stuff there. It's a pretty rich website of information. You want to take this a step further than a film.
Well, we do. And part of the thinking was it's a passion of mine. I've been in the business of television and storytelling for a long time, quite a long time, decades. Worked at all the major broadcast networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, and most recently PBS. And my concern is about telling stories that can actually spark change. And what we did was design something that's somewhat unusual. We created a distribution system where each of the places where there would be a screening, it would come about through a local host organization asking for the screening and wanting to use it to catalyze or spark action in their community to help their own local goals of economic revitalization. And we're not telling them how to carry about fixing the future in Columbus or in any of the other towns. But we're providing this as a way to build, you might call it social capital, people who all come together and say, wow, yeah, we can all do better in the economy. We can all agree on the fact that things aren't that great, and this is not a partisan. No one has to be yelling at each other in a partisan way about the fact there's a problem. And let's look at some solutions and roll up our sleeves and get started. So the notion, and you see it a little bit on the fixingthefuture.org website, and you have links to it, I believe, on your own radio website. The notion is that these host organizations then go into an action mode. And I believe you later in the hour will hear a little bit from Support Our Local Economy, which is a Columbus, Ohio-based host organization.
Right. One of the animated shorts on the Fix the Future website talks about how the new economy works. And first of all, is it really a new economy or just a really old economy more consciously re-envisioned?
I think you're absolutely right. It's calling it a new economy is really doing it a disservice because, as one of the folks in the film says, we've been helping neighbors for ever since we started walking on 2 feet. This is how we deal with each other in as a human community. And another person puts it in an interesting way. He says, for the past half century, we've been living under a kind of spell of enchantment of a consumer driven society where all we do is buy things and we don't think of ourselves as producers. And this is returning to something which is very much in a rich history in America of people making things and helping one another do better in their communities.
You, going back to your comment, we don't think of ourselves as producers. We think of somebody else as they are doing it for us. How does a movement like this reach out and wake up people? How does it reach the people, really, in some cases, who for generations have been marginalized by the growth of big business? They don't think it's possible.
I think that that's your question really unpacks a whole area of discussion, and part of it is big business presents itself as the only solution. You know, it's Wall Street, it's the giant employers. Well, we've seen what happens in the case of these big employers. They're making tons of money, but the jobs are not in the United States. It turns out that small businesses in the U.S. account for more than half of private sector employment. But we don't really think or hear about that very much. And so I would add to the problem packet, if you will, is that media tends to make people think, it's a lot of elites that are yelling each other about what's broken. So there is a challenge to get out the word to tell people that change is possible. And the way that we adopted, as you'll see in Fixing the Future, is that the very best way to spread the word is to show examples that are already working. It's not a wonky kind of thing where a bunch of academics say, well, in our theoretical formulation, it should be possible to do something different. It's David's road trip going from Maine to California, Austin, Texas, to Fargo, North Dakota, and finding these incredible examples. And that's the very best way, I think, to sponsor change or to get people to start talking about change is saying, wow, they did it. Why can't I?
One of the issues that you bring up that I wasn't exactly expecting but made sense was the issue of how we measure economic success traditionally. At that micro level, it's net profits, and at the national level, GDP. That paradigm is questioned in the film. So what's the alternative? What do you propose?
Well, we've all come to accept that. In fact, it's something that it's on the top of the news. You know, what's America's GDP? How does it compare with Europe or with other countries around the world? And we accept this and as a sort of standard yardstick for how well we're doing. Well, all that measures is economic activity. And when you kind of look at it, what it means is that if you took a bicycle and rode around and had a nice time in Columbus, Ohio, and maybe took some water from your tap, you wouldn't be contributing anything to the GDP. Whereas if you took your car and drove around and bought some, you know, imported fruit at the gourmet deli and a bottle of water from South Pacific, you would be doing more to increase the GDP, but you're like contributing to CO2 output, and there's lots of other corollary bad things happening. So the notion here is that there are other measures which can and should be included in thinking about how well we're doing. Economic activity is one measure, but we should also look at the community health, at the health of the world in terms of how we're treating the notion of sustainability, whether we're creating a planet that we can hand on in good health to our children and grandchildren, and also to the health of a neighborhood and a community. How are people socially improved or not by these activities? All of these come up to a kind of a larger measure And I would actually add one more that's discussed at some length in the film. It's like, are we happier? Mm-hmm. Do we feel better? And some of the measures show that the U.S., although it's a leader in the world in GDP and economic activity, comes down pretty low in the rankings. I think it's like, you know, around number 10. And like, how palpable. We're all working harder, but do we feel better? I don't think so.
Can't compete with Costa Rica and Bhutan, apparently. Why aren't organizations like the National Federation for Independent Businesses, the Chambers of Commerce, why aren't those organizations filling this or part of this paradigm?
I think that's a fascinating question. I actually come at this from not everyone does, and in a hyper-partisan environment, it's sometimes you have to like take a deep breath and remember that this is the way forward, is that I look at all of these groups as you might call them, unlikely allies. When you center the discussion around jobs and community economic revitalization, who's on the opposing side? Who's going to say, I'm against that? And I think it takes a deep breath to say, okay, we could have some really big differences about lots of political issues, about the role of big government, about whatever, unions, you name it. You and I could sit down and come up very quickly with a list of things that divide us. But on the issue of community economic growth and creating sustainable jobs, who's opposed, right? So part of this is to get people beyond the kind of dug, entrenched positions that they've adopted, where a lot of interest groups pay lobbyists and have a substantial presence in Washington and believe the very best way to largesse and economic success is basically to have Congress put something in a bill or the president sign something that's going to help them out. And that we've all become almost fixated on the dealings in Washington as the way in and the way out of our problems. And so this really requires kind of a rethinking of, like, we have to think, and one of the people in the film says, this is short-termism. We're looking for the quick fix. I just heard on your local radio about somebody who won a big winning ticket on the lottery. We're all looking for that big payout. When you sort of move into a mode of, like, let's invest in our community and help grow jobs, you have to think of, like, I want to make a community that my children would be happy to live in.
Overall, there's a lot of people talking in the film about self-satisfaction. They feel fulfilled. They're happy, and they're not necessarily rich.
I think that that's an important moment, and it's important to also say that we really made an effort to include lots of diverse communities.
Mm-hmm.
Later, there's a group, fascinating group in Cleveland. It's about the getting jobs in the inner city area there in Cleveland, but. To your point about people who are not rich, they're not focused on getting that extra dollar and having the bigger house or the bigger car. They have enough. And what is enough? It's a moving target. But I think for many people, the meltdown of the economy 3-4 years ago was a real wake-up call, that this notion of always getting more, consuming more, the bigger house, the bigger car, racing around and you know, getting your, you know, huge basket at the big box store and filling it up. Like, what are we doing? And the notion of ever climbing personal debt, people putting all this on their cards. So people are, there's this whole notion of one of the terms that's used is slow munch.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think that out. I've heard about slow food. It's kind of appreciating what you cook, but slow money is like really thinking deeply about where my money is going and what I'm satisfied with.
My guest is John Seiseloff. He's executive producer of Fixing the Future. It's a new documentary about the local economy movement. If you want to learn more about that, there's a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. When we return, we'll talk more with John about this issue and bring in some local voices as well. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, top Syrian officials killed in a suicide attack battle in Damascus. We'll look at the end game of Syria's bloody crisis. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 77 degrees in downtown Columbus. Showers and thunderstorms today, mainly after 2 p.m. Another warm day with a high of 91. Showers and thunderstorms tonight as well, a low of 72 degrees. Partly sunny on Friday, still that chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high of 86.
Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State Marion, presenting the Warren G. Harding Symposium, America at a Crossroads, the 1920 presidential campaign, July 20th and 21st. Tickets at 740-725-6340.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Now I need to get myself over to Cleveland to check out what I hear is a supersized twist on a time-tested idea. It's called Evergreen, a worker-owned cooperative designed to transform an entire community.
That's David Brancaccio in a new documentary about the local economy movement, using sustainable approaches to reinvent the American economy and create jobs. Still with us is John Seiseloff. He's executive producer of Fixing the Future. Joining us now is Wolf Starr. He's the owner of Small Business Beanstalk and a founding member of Support Our Local Economy. It's a Central Ohio network of independent businesses, individuals, and organizations. We've talked about Small Business Beanstalk before on the show, so welcome back, Wolf Starr.
Thank you for having me again.
Also with us is Bill Lafayette, since 2011, founder and owner of Regionomics, an economic consulting business. Before that, Bill spent 12 years as vice president of economic analysis for the Columbus Chamber of Commerce and 4 years with Rickenbacker Port Authority. Welcome back to the show as well, Bill.
Thank you, Ann.
Let's turn to that Cleveland example, John Seiseloff. Tell us a little bit about that and why you picked it for the film.
It's a story about worker-owned cooperatives, and it talks about a little bit in the film. A lot of us think of cooperatives more in the nature of food co-ops, and as one of the people says, it's that place that you go and you get cheap cheese, and it smells like patchouli.
Right. But this is very different than that.
The sense that the workers all own shares and are basically the owners and managers of their own company. And the twist in Cleveland, this is not a new idea, and there's some examples throughout America and throughout the world. But the twist in Cleveland is fascinating. It's a number of the founding, they call them anchor institutions, Cleveland Clinic among them, and some of the academic institutions in Cleveland. These are places that are not going anywhere, and they did an analysis of their procurement policies. And they found that if you look at the handful of very large institutions, they spend $3 billion, that has a B in it, $1 billion a year in procurement, very little of it in the city of Cleveland. And so they went to them and said, listen, you guys have some problems in the inner city, in the city of Cleveland. It's not doing as well as it used to, small understatement there. And why not create some local worker-owned cooperatives that are supplying to your big institutions and employing minority workers who otherwise wouldn't have jobs? So the Evergreen Laundry is an example of one of them. And they do like industrial-scale laundry. And many of the people working there, almost all are minorities, African-Americans in the predominantly, and very few would have jobs. And these guys not only have a job, they are worker owners of the institution.
Bill Lafayette, is that sort of system of big entities not using local goods and services, is that replicated around the country, or is that typical maybe more in the Rust Belt, as we call it, or what?
I think it's a national and probably international phenomenon, because we have these huge organizations and they have huge demands for goods and services. And so their first thought is to procure those goods and services from large producers. And this Evergreen Cooperatives idea kind of turns that on its head.
The Evergreen story also, John Seiseloff, gets into the issue of sustainability. There's a big thrust for that in the movement. Why did that come into play necessarily? It's not something people traditionally think of in terms of basic economics.
It comes back to something we briefly touched on earlier in our discussion, Ann, and that has to do with, let's look at the outputs and see whether we're building something for the long term in our community. And if we're creating jobs, but we're doing it in a way that spoils the planet, who helps in the end? Who benefits? And is that the right way to do things? And I think people are coming to the notion, maybe it started with food, is that people want to feel like their food comes from a place they know about and has, one of the people in the film says, has a relationship with the providers as opposed to, as she puts it, a one-night stand relationship where you don't know where things come from. So it's about knowing where things come from, but it's also really being responsible to the planet about what you do with your economic activity.
If you have a question or comment for our guests, we're talking about local economy movements. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. So, Wolfstar, you started the Small Business Beanstalk. Refresh our memory about how the Beanstalk started and why you thought it was important.
Absolutely. As we started off, we were originally a business-to-business network where we played matchmaker between the local co-op food business and the designers and the printing companies, and we really just connected all the dots throughout the businesses. Later, we came up with the community card, which is how we've become best known, which is the free card that you can order off our website or off our Facebook, where the businesses reward you for shopping local. So at one place, you'll get half off your happy hour. If you go to another restaurant or grocery store, you'll get a different discount. And it's just whatever the business decides they want to give you back to say thank you. Most recently, we've come back around to that business-to-business side, and we're connecting the businesses with more local providers and helping to connect all the dots with not only the businesses but also with the different community organizations so that they can source from local businesses.
So, John Seisloff, was that sort of another example of the thing that was going on in Portland, Oregon, the sharing the hour, the trading time?
It's in the paradigm of trying to help each other in a local basis. The B2B model, business-to-business model, it's kind of taking that up from people helping each other to businesses helping each other. And, you know, Wolf, I'm sure you can tell us more about it, but my understanding about it is you really look carefully to try and capture the value of local purchases, local providers, and local business activities. And you don't look at your people down the street, even if they're in the same line of business necessarily, as your enemies, that you have to like put them out of business to succeed. In fact, it's this kind of virtuous cycle where if you actually really carefully as a large network within a community, businesses help each other, everyone benefits.
Bill Lafayette, what about that, the idea of economies of scale that we're always looking for? We're looking for a cheaper way to do it, to expand our bottom line. Does this fly in the face of that, or is there some way that it kind of dovetails with it?
I think it can dovetail in the sense that you're scaling appropriately. You're not necessarily producing automobiles down the street. That clearly won't work. But you're trying to figure out things that you can do close to home, economically, with using local talent, local business, shortening your supply lines. That's really what that Evergreen Commercial Laundry does for University Hospital and the Cleveland Clinic.
How common, John Seisloff, are organizations like Support Our Local Economy around the country? They come with different names and you know, different sorts of ideas, but how common is that to have an organization like that?
It was a surprise to me in the reporting we did that we found how many are out there. Wolf, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Support Our Local Economy is one of the member organizations of a larger national network called BALLE, Business Alliance for Local Living Economies. And this is kind of a network. They say there's like 22,000 businesses that are part of it across the country. And, you know, this is folks that are, I mean, this is what small business is all about. Of course they want their local economies to do well. And in an era where growth in terms of just, you know, things getting better all the time is clearly not happening for us, the notion is how can we work together to make our communities do better?
Wolfstar, how do you measure success as a founding member of Support Our Local Economy? What are you looking for? What are your benchmarks?
The way that we really judge things is just people's thought processes moving forward. When we decided to start up Soul with Chuck Lind and Simply Living and quite a few of the other groups, the thought was, let's just remind everybody about why it is important to support Columbus, to be a part of the Central Ohio community moving forward. We're in a pretty special space right here where on the national landscape we're having celebrities that are often ones that we laugh at, but the most popular local celebrity is an ice cream maker here in town. And it's important for us to be telling those stories and get people thinking about it and to really honor Central Ohio for being Central Ohio. Being part of the Bally Network is simply a way for us to learn from other communities' best practices, for us to go there, talk to them, share what we're doing well, and learn from them.
So how big is Support Our Local Economy? How many people, how many businesses, or what is it made up of?
Sure. Support Our Local Economy is a very interesting organization. My business partner, Alex, actually was the one from our team who got involved originally, but we take a lot of our great local organizations. It's Simply Living, Kemba Credit Union, Local Matters, which many people know as part of the Greener Grocer as well, and then ourselves with the SBB. And we take the shared different resources, and then we're all able to work together to highlight the different great things that are going on in Central Ohio.
I know you're sponsoring a screening of the film tonight. And, you know, once again, if anybody wants to learn more about that Fixing the Future new documentary, we're also talking with the executive producer, John Seiseloff, about that. You can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about, or what else do you do?
Yeah. So for tonight's example, we're not only working with the Gateway Film Center, which is a great community partner with us, but we're working with Brothers Drake Meadery. They're doing a tasting, great local products. They're a phenomenal example of a local business, which is putting money back into the community to help it grow. And we're having the conversation. So the event itself is at 7:30 for the screening, but we're having an hour and a half happy hour conversation with the community that arrives to really discuss different ways to get involved and to help support our local economy.
I noticed in the literature about Soul that it's you emphasize that it's not anti non-local or anti-national chains franchises or brands. Did you find that to be the case in your journeys for Fixing the Future, John Seiseloff?
I think that what we're finding is that people in every location are finding a solution that works for them. One of the folks that's in the panel discussion that's featured in the at the close of the film says, for a half century, we've been told that for big business, basically every location is the same. It's just a place where people buy things, and that the growth happens by uniformity, making things all be closer to every other place. What we've been hearing from Wolf Starr and Bill Lafayette in the Central Ohio examples is that actually there's a huge benefit, and I would add to that an economic benefit, treating every location and locale as unique and playing up the particulars of a location and of the businesses and the people who live there. And, you know, part of the benefits of this kind of a journey that we took around the country is it's a process of getting people to think carefully about, okay, where's my dollar going? If it's the same cost or maybe even a few pennies more, why? Maybe it's actually helps my community to put it into a local store or into an activity that benefits our community.
Bill Lafayette, do you have some examples of organizations like that that have been out there already?
Well, there's one organization that I'm very familiar with because I used to be on the board, and that's the Short North Alliance. It used to be the Short North Business Association before it merged with the CID in the Short North. And that is an organization of the businesses that are in the Short North who come together to share information, to share resources, to work together, to buy things from one another, to support one another, to improve the quality of the experience of the visitors to the Short North.
You know, just let's go look a little wider right now. What is the state before all of this, or maybe during it, of business development and entrepreneurship in Central Ohio? Are we doing well? How do we stack up?
Well, that is one of the reasons why this is so exciting to me. I was on here a few months ago with Bobby Garber talking about the benchmarking report that they put together for the Columbus Partnership. Mm-hmm. And one of the very troubling results of that study was that we really lag in business formation. We really lag both nationally and among our peers in the percentage of businesses in Central Ohio that are small. And it's the small businesses that create growth, create jobs, create opportunities. Some of those small businesses grow up to be Wendy's and The Limited and Nationwide and businesses that everyone now knows. But there seems to be a disconnect between the opportunity and the awareness in the community of that opportunity, because it's impossible for me to believe that people in Central Ohio are less entrepreneurial than they are anywhere else.
But it seems like we're always, we meaning, you know, different communities are always trying to brag about how many Fortune 500 companies they have in their backyard and that sort of thing. Right, John Sisolov? I mean, that's the typical bragging point, not how many entrepreneurs we have.
I would say that the national conversation is almost entirely drowned out by Wall Street, what's going on in Washington, and the fortunes or misfortunes of the very biggest companies in the U.S. And I think it's, first of all, we have a huge economy, and it's great that, you know, we have these huge new players in the economy, Google and others, that just didn't even exist a decade or so ago. But when you look at the hiring patterns of these Fortune 500 companies, it's a very disturbing kind of situation. They're making, not all of them, but many of them, record profits. They're pulling down a lot of money, but they're not generating a lot of jobs. And the jobs they do generate, the new growth, doesn't seem to be ending up in Central Ohio or in other areas in the U.S. So there's another conversation that's going on, and this is what's so interesting. I go back to the thing I mentioned earlier, that small businesses, and we heard this from Bill just now, that they account for more than half of private sector employment. This is not like a feel-good and helping mm-hmm. out the— This is what the local economy is all about. And so part of the journey that we made across America in fixing the future is to lay out these examples where it really is working and where these local businesses are making a difference, not only in that they're giving an income to the folks that founded them and to their employees, but also that by working together, they're actually improving the economic life of the community.
We're talking about the local economy movement with John Sisolov, executive producer of a new documentary film about the topic. It's called Fixing the Future. Also, Wolf Star, owner of Small Business Beanstalk and a founding member of Support Our Local Economy. And Bill Lafayette, owner of Regionomics. If you have a question or comment, want to talk about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
We'll be right back. The Midwest is sweltering through what could be the worst drought in a generation. And it's not just farmers feeling parched. It's everyone who makes a living in the Corn Belt. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Drought's long reach. Plus NPR's Keith Woods on awkward conversations about race and why even the best of us mess up sometimes. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4, right here on 89.7 NPR News. Receive daily updates from WOSU by liking our station on Facebook or follow WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Just visit WOSU.org/email to sign up.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
78 degrees in downtown Columbus, showers and thunderstorms likely this afternoon, a high of 91. More rain for tonight, maybe a thunderstorm, a low of 72 degrees. Partly sunny with still that chance of showers and thunderstorms on Friday, a high of 86. And looking ahead to Saturday, sunshine and a high of 85. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
As the journey draws to a close, the lesson for me is that we Americans are an enterprising lot. In tough economic times, folks are experimenting with new ways to create jobs from the bottom up and new ways to organize businesses. There's a common element in all of these efforts. They're building on local relationships.
That's David Brancaccio in a new documentary about the local economy movement, using sustainable approaches to reinvent the American economy and create jobs. Still with us is John Sisoloff. He's executive producer of Fixing the Future. Also, Wolf Starr, the owner of Small Business Beanstalk, and Bill Lafayette, founder and owner of Regionomics. John Sisoloff, one message in the film, as David Brancaccio brought up, is largely about relationship. That's where the success comes from, human relationships. Once again, this is a new idea or as old as the hills?
I mean, who are we as humans if we're not people who relate to one another? I mean, we're not, fixed into cubicles and looking into our laptops and, punching buttons on our smartphones is so not the human condition. And one fierce person puts it very movingly in talking about the relationship of networked people helping each other. The Time Bank in Portland, Maine, says we're remembering community, that we always had it, but it's still there. We've kind of moved away from it in how we've lived our lives, but now when we re-enter a world in which we're relating to one another in business and in community, we're remembering the benefits of that.
There is one person you interview for the film. I'm pretty sure it was from the Portland example, a barber who doesn't participate in the timesharing program. He says it just doesn't work for him. What did you learn about people who feel like they don't fit into it?
I think that this is what the community is about. There was a period when you felt like if you had to have something successful, everyone, it's almost like a sense that everyone had to join, that it wouldn't be work. This is a really notion of, and when you think about political organizing, I'll step back for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Barber you quoted was in the city of Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
And is an interesting local currency movement, which is a little bit like what we heard from Wolf about using incentives to get people to shop locally. And he says, I understand that the local currency is out there, but how does this kind of help me? My mortgage company is in the Midwest. They don't take local currency, so on. But the notion of what does this mean? How do these relationships stack up, and how do they add up to changes? The way I think of it, and this is kind of a fancy word for it, is that citizens are co-creators of democracy. That they play a role in affecting what's around them, and that this has an impact on their community and by growing on the larger national discussion. And one of the ways that I characterize it is that many people are conditioned to think of change happening through protest. by people carrying signs outside a political building and saying something has to change. And when you kind of step back and think about that, where you come out is saying, we're protesting because we don't have any power, and you guys in the building, the political elite, have power. We're begging you to do something. Whereas what's going on now is a different kind of organizing, a different kind of change, where people are saying, hey, we're doing something that's kind of neat, and it's working for us. Join with us. And it's not saying there's a penalty for not joining. It's like, this would be a better kind of life for you. And you might find that in the sort of satisfaction quotient, that it's working out better than what you're doing now. And as one person says about the overall economy in the U.S., if it's not working, let's try something different.
Did you have any experiences like that, Wolfstar, as far as getting small business Beanstalk going and getting some buy-in from the people you need to participate?
Well, from a business standpoint, we have three rules for businesses to be able to join. First of all, they have to be local and independent. And the second rule is we have to be able to provide a value. So we're at a little over 600 businesses between the business-to-business and the business-to-consumer right now of organizations all working together. But in some situations, if we can't provide the value, it's not the right fit for them, and we don't need to be everything for everybody. We want to help the right businesses that we can make sure. And we also have a third rule, which is that businesses have to be awesome, which is just our fun way of saying we want businesses that can work together, that enjoy what they're doing, want to be part of the organization, and are going to help support our local economy at the same time. So it's not something which is perfect for everybody, but it's perfect for so many that we'd rather have the right businesses all working together rather than try and force it down anyone's throat and say, you have to be a part of our group, otherwise you don't qualify for being a good member of Central Ohio.
Dan in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you. Great program. Thanks for covering this.
Thank you.
So I'm a member of Kimba, and I would like to hear them, and I'm very, very satisfied with the service and the interest rates and all that in comparison to some other banks, and just like to hear what your guests say about credit unions and small banks and how they can contribute. I'll just add that there's been a lot in the news lately about the big investment banks and what they
have been
doing to us. I don't think you find that nearly as much with the smaller credit unions and local banks, and just love to hear your guest comments about that.
Wolfstar?
Yeah, it's a wonderful time to be a member of a credit union right now. We've seen an awful lot of change. Especially in the last 10 to 12 months of people bumping their banks, as we call it in Central Ohio, joining these credit unions and really pairing together. The big benefit that we see when we work with our independent credit unions and even those who are working in partnerships together are really cool programs, one of which being the Cash Mobs, which were organized between half a dozen or so Central Ohio credit unions themselves, where they took a look and they said, some of our businesses need a little bit of a hand up, and this is a way where we can encourage people to come and work together. So the Central Ohio Credit Union League, which includes Telhio, Kemba, Members First, and a handful of others, are saying, we're going to work together to try and get people to go to independent businesses. And rather than compete, we realize that when many people switch from the larger national international groups to these local credit unions, all ships will rise. So it's very much a partnership of them working together and working with all the members rather than competing.
Obviously, capital investment is always important when it comes to building a business. And John Sisolof, are you finding this around the country as well?
A huge movement around the country. It's growing. And one of the things we discovered in our reporting is that when you look at the community banks as a group, which include credit unions, make up only 20% of the banking industry in measured by assets. But these community banks make nearly 60% of all the loans to small businesses. And another way of saying that is that these big national and international chains, they're not interested in you guys in Central Ohio. They've got bigger fish to fry. They'd rather bundle the derivatives. So the banks have an interest in the success of the local economy. They're part of the local economy. And so we found, we did some reporting, in fact, on one of the largest of the community banks in the nation. It's located in North Dakota. It's a bank called Bremer, B-R-E-M-E-R. But it's it has like over 100 branches in three states, but it's locally owned, and its business is putting money back into local businesses. And, you know, they weathered the downturn. There's some community banks, as did national chains, suffered in the melt a few years ago, but most of them did just fine because they were investing in local businesses that have survived and thrived.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Bremer is not new.
Bremer was founded almost 60 years ago. And it's grown because it has Midwestern roots. It's based in North Dakota, but it spreads out into other areas, including Minnesota. And they are 92% owned by its own nonprofit organization. And it's sort of a fancy way of saying it's a for-profit bank that's organized on banking principles, but it responds to a board, which is a socially responsible board. And they give back to the community. So it's an example. Some people think, well, these community banks, they're kind of nice, but they're a little bit kind of mom and pop. How do they, you know, when people really need some serious capital, of course you have to, like, you know, knock on the door of one of those big chains. That's not the case. And one of the discussions that's raised in the film, which is a sort of a larger and very important political discussion, is when you look at where the money goes from the Federal Reserve, which has kind of got their hand is on the spigot, right? Or their collective hand is on the spigot of a money supply. The big banks get a window of favorability. They get like first dibs, and there's a very interesting discussion going on that you won't read about in the papers, but economists are quite interested in this. What if you get a first window to community banks, where the notion is they're making 60% of the loans to small businesses? Why not use national policy to give them a helping hand before you give the big banks? Because when you look at the recent history of big banks, it ain't so good.
Raises an interesting issue, though, John, about the what these organizations can do. Can they compete against these huge entities that spend, invest, if you will, lots of money in Washington for these very kinds of policies that benefit them?
I mean, we all have a different answer to that, mm-hmm. And I've learned a lot during this discussion about the great things going on in Columbus and in Central Ohio with the groups that are working there. Some of this is, as you are more effective on the ground, you can get political strength. I go back to this notion of politics being a notion where you're saying, we're working on something, join with us. And reaching out, there's a step where, you know, Columbus and others around the country, in fact, not just an Ohio phenomenon, but as you enact these efforts that are successful in building community businesses, you join with your congresspeople and your political representatives to say, help us out here, because in the end, you're representing us. And yet, the big organizations have their thumb on the scale. They're contributing lots of dollars. And let's just be very open about this. Big financial institutions contribute to both parties. Big numbers to both parties. This is not say one party or the other is sort of, you know, head in this. But that from community success, you can make a difference is out there. The American Sustainable Business Council is representing a lots and lots of organizations and businesses that are doing things differently at the local level. They just had a meeting at the White House explaining how this is working to create jobs. And if you come with a narrative of success in making jobs,
sounds like John Seisloff, we've lost you for a moment. In the meantime, Dan from Clintonville, thanks for joining the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Take care. John in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
I'd like to ask the question of companies that learn of this process that's developing and want to get involved. Nothing has been said about where do they go, how do they go about finding out information. And what I'd like to ask is, and perhaps propose, is a notion of a small community-bounded, community-oriented database that would be sort of an automatic place for individuals and corporations and entrepreneurs in the local community who want to get involved with local access of products and services, and large organizations who want to develop better, closer community relations would go to that local community-oriented database to find out who's supplying what and get information about the entire operation. And if that experience in one community then gets shared with others, why, these databases could accelerate the process and make it a great deal easier.
We have a couple of different resources for you. The first one's our own companies, which is www.thesbb.com, which lists out all the businesses which are part of our network. And another one is Think Columbus First, which shares some of the resources which we've compiled together as the organizations working together.
And this brings up a real interesting opportunity to fold in some economic data on that as well.
Yes.
To be a resource for local businesses. And so I'm kind of all about that.
John, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
And I want to say thanks to all of our guests today. First, John Sisoloff, executive producer of Fixing the Future. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Talking to you today, Ann.
If you want to learn more about Fixing the Future and the screening tonight, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/LSides. I promise we'll have a link there for you that you can get to with information. Also, Wolf Starr, owner of Small Business Beanstalk and a founding member of Support Our Local Economy. Wolf, thanks for joining the program again.
Thank you.
And Bill Lafayette, owner of Regionomics, economic analyst. Thank you very much, Bill, for being here.
Thanks a bunch, Ann.
And thanks to everybody for listening. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.